Hello, Ominous Archive members. It's Sam here. A couple of weeks ago, Nick and Em examined the Mariana Trench on the Ominous Archives. And as they did, the shelves in the library seemed to shift. We then came across a volume that hadn't been cataloged before. Its cover was warped, faintly salted at the edges, and the pages felt heavier than paper should. No author was listed. No publication date, just a story that, for reasons we can't fully explain, is tied to the trench. This is how the library operates. When a topic lingers, when it carries more weight than facts alone can hold, a piece of fiction makes itself known. Here is the story. It was my 100th diving expedition, at least. I dove in some of the harshest environments, swam with bulls and whites, but nothing could have prepared me for the horror that awaited me 36,000 feet down. The depth didn't scare me as much as the small vehicle we were climbing into. At first, I couldn't get over the smell. It had only descended one other time, but it smelled like the sweat and BO and fear left behind from the first crew nearly a year and a half earlier. I could feel the energy as soon as I nestled in. My legs crossed and already cramping. Somehow it felt safer to be out there floating in an endless abyss. The sound of the metal flexing as we climbed deeper, even deeper still, made me wonder if there was a bottom at all. Mr. Wallace looked relaxed. This was his machine and engineering after all. What could go wrong? As we sat there, me in my corner, just big enough for my slim yet lanky frame, and him, probably too big to be allowed in this machine, something that had stopped other customers from partaking, he took up the majority of the window. It did not matter, though. We couldn't see anything. Past expeditions explained how the silt and sea floor stirred up as soon as the vehicle dropped down. Only a few more minutes, Mr. Wallace explained. Hours sure do tick by slower down here, don't they? I tried to hide my nervousness. Once we get down, we'll use these remotes to collect some samples. He held up a PlayStation remote control, and I couldn't believe this was the genius I had decided to descend 36,000 feet into the Mariana Trench with. After what felt like 2 hours rather than one, we finally touched the bottom. I felt as though I had left Earth. Everything looked remarkably plain and one-dimensional. The only light came from the small lamp mounted on the front of the vehicle. We turned to see more of the ominous environment we had landed in. The smell of body odor grew, and I noticed then how much Mr. Wallace was sweating. We collected our samples, listened in silence, and continued shining the light around the vehicle. At that moment, I felt like Mr. Wallace and I were the only humans alive, so alone. That feeling might be enough to send anyone into a panic, but it was Mr. Wallace's next line that forced my atheist heart into believing in God, or at least hoping there was one. "Listen, Mr. Simon, I'm going to need you to read me those meters behind your head." He motioned for me to turn around as he frantically looked at his clipboard and monitored a black and green screen flashing to his right. "Sure, the pressure gauge is spiking. The PSI is increasing rapidly and still climbing. Vertical velocity reads -3 feet per second. We're still descending. How the hell are we moving?" I asked. "The instruments say it's so, but look at the cavern. Keep focused on it. If we are moving, why is that cavern still?" Mr. Wallace asked, as if I had an answer. "You know, Mr. Wallace, I was kind of hoping for you to answer my question with an answer, not an even more terrifying question. Can we call someone?" Mr. Wallace turned desperately, looking for his walkie-talkie. "Surface control, this is Deep Sub 2 at Challenger Deep. Do you copy? Over." Static was the only response. "Shit, this sometimes happens. When we're this deep, sometimes the signal doesn't reach," he said, exasperated. "So we can travel to space and keep contact with NASA, but we take a dive in the Mariana Trench and suddenly we're too far?" I gawked. Then the depth reader started going off. 40,000 feet. Then 75,000. "That's not possible. I don't even see the silt moving up. Can this even stand that pressure?" I screamed. "This isn't meant to go beyond 80,000 feet, Mr. Wallace said as the depth reader froze. "That's as far as the machine can read," he said solemnly. The cavern that we had been staring at, the one that had been unmoving as our depth climbed deeper, suddenly began to shift. Then it opened. A force began pulling the vehicle toward it, creaking and shaking. The vehicle's light turned off and the red emergency lights and alarms began to blare. "What the fuck is happening?" I asked. Simon, look! Mr. Wallace frantically pressed his face against the window. The cavern opened up to something incredible. It looked like a galaxy filled with stars and planets. The vehicle pulled toward it, a force I began to feel in my teeth. Nausea overtook me next, and I felt as though my head was going to burst. Mr. Wallace, strapped tightly into a space far too small for his broad frame, began gasping. The pressure seemed to crush against his chest. His face turned a violent shade of red as sweat poured from his brow. Then, total blackness. I felt the world go upside down, and I struggled to make my way to the window. The starry sky was falling behind, and along with it, the cavern that had pulled us through. Just as suddenly, the vehicle flipped, and then land was rushing toward us. "Mr. Wallace, brace yourself," I screamed, but Mr. Wallace was already dead. I felt his pulse and his tongue was hanging out, almost as if he had died from a heart attack. The land came faster and faster, then water. The vehicle bounced as if gravity had made it rubber. Once it was floating, I opened the door. The air was pure, salty, but fresh. The sky was purple, streaked with orange and periwinkle. I could see a sun, but also a moon, and the light gave off that 90s blue hour glow I remember so fondly from growing up. It was the most beautiful sight. The ocean water sparkled like diamonds and were the most translucent teal I had ever seen. But on the shore, I saw tall, pale green figures with three eyes. The machine drifted to the shore and I threw my hands up as a sign of peace. "My name is Simon and I'm not sure how I got here." They simply stared at me. "Am I dead?" I asked. One of them walked slowly to greet me. He or she, I couldn't tell as they all had the same anatomy, twitched its head at me and clicked its tongues, which split and involuntarily slipped out every few seconds. It never spoke words, but I could understand its intended message. "You're not meant to be here." Blackness swarmed my senses, and when I woke, I felt the hands of Mr. Wallace's team frantically pulling me out of the vehicle. "He's not breathing," they screamed as they pulled Mr. Wallace out behind me. I couldn't speak for at least a month. I tried, but it was almost as if my tongue were too thick to form vowels and nouns. When I finally could, I tried to tell anyone who would listen. They chalked it up to deep sea delirium. I have dived at least 100 times before, all with bulls and whites. It wasn't deep sea delirium. It was another world. One which we are not invited to.